All right, the time is 3 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. A very, very good morning to you, all the Eagle FM listeners, no matter where you are tuning in from. Thank you so much for always joining us, for always juicing us. Thank you so much. And welcome to the early morning scoop. This is a program dedicated to providing you with latest update on the economy, entrepreneurship, and public policy. And I'm your host, Lois Ashimi. I'll be with you until the hour 7:30. And please do not forget to connect with us on our social media platform, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Reading Newspaper page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update and, of course, the newspaper alerts. And do not forget to download the Eagle FM app that is available on Google Play Store and the App Store. Just to stay informed wherever you go. And do not forget to, again, download the IMBA app. You find that on your Google Play Store and, of course, the App Store. And to start off internationally is that the East African Community, the Southern African Development Community, that's SADC, and the Common Market for Eastern and South Africa, COMESA, merged in July 2024 to form the agreement, actually. So now creating one of the largest regional economic bloc in Africa. Now this week we can also take a look at how far is this, or is the promise also, or the challenges they might face on this agreement. We might take a listen to this particular update.
A year since a deal creating one of the biggest regional economic blocs in Africa came into force, the Tripartite Free Trade Area Agreement, TFTA, brings together the East African Community, EAC, Southern African Development Community, SADC, and the Common Market for Eastern and Southern Africa, COMESA. The TFTA comprises 29 countries, representing 53% of the African Union's membership. It aims to deepen market integration, spur infrastructure development, and foster industrialization. However, the merger presents both opportunities and challenges. This week on the program, we track how far the TFTA has come since its creation, its promise, and the headwinds it may face. I'm Penina Karibe. Welcome to Talk Africa. Common Market, which is a merger of two or more countries in which there is free movement of persons, goods, labor, services, and capital. The monetary union is the third pillar of integration. This creates a single regional currency that will facilitate easier trade among partner states. Political federation is the highest pillar of integration. Once the first three are established, full economic and political union is achieved. Member countries surrender national sovereignty to supranational institutions, and a permanent legal and institutional framework is established. Joining me now to unpack the EAC, SADC, and COMESA Tripartite Free Trade Area Agreement are, from Johannesburg, Letabo Sithole, Managing Director at Amila Africa. From Lusaka, we have Zodwa Mabuza, the Chief of Sub-Regional Initiatives at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, UNECA. And from Dar es Salaam, we have Novatas Igosha, International Affairs Analyst. Welcome everyone to the program. Zodwa, I will begin with you, because in 2018, you co-authored a paper with David Luke titled TFTA and AFCFTA, Making a Case for Consolidation, where you looked at these two groupings. So I have two questions for you. Number one, how was the EAC, SADC, and COMESA merger negotiated given the existing tensions and disagreements between some countries in the region? And two, how different is the TFTA from the African Continental Free Trade Area?
Yes, I coordinated the negotiations among the 26 countries of the COMESA, EAC, and SADC, and we authored this paper with David Luke. On the issue of tension, maybe let me start by saying negotiators are diplomats, so we could not see the tension. But you know, negotiations can be tough, where each negotiator basically show their negotiation prowess. So that's the only tension that one could see. But in terms of the conflict that is there in the region, it was not displayed at the negotiation table. So when you look at the tripartite FTA, it's very much different from the African Continental Free Trade Area. There are some similarities, but these are two different configurations. The tripartite FTA is made up of 29 countries with a population of about 800 million people and a GDP of about $1.8 trillion, I think, the last time I checked. AFTA is comprised of all African countries, the 54 African countries. It's a much bigger market. And perhaps the other difference that one can note is that the AFTA has moved faster than the TFTA, and there are reasons for that. But the two are different, whereas they did, like the AFTA did borrow a lot from the text of the tripartite FTA.
Right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item in South Africa is that the higher number of South Africans continue to experience food insecurity despite South Africa being one of the leading countries in food production. Now, according to the census report of 2022, approximately 15.3 million South Africans suffer from food insecurity, with another 6.8 million experiencing severe food insecurity. We might take a listen to this.
To play a fundamental role in food security. It's also a key contributor to fight poverty and create much-needed jobs. The sector's critical role was demonstrated at this year's NAMPOS Harvest Week in the Free State. Some lawmakers took time to interact with the agricultural sector to understand what the farmers need from government to grow the industry.
Food security is right at the top of the agenda now of things like the G20, the G7, the African Union and the like. And I think agriculture is now starting to be seen as its rightful importance in the social fabric and the health of a nation. And I think that is why we've seen such an unmitigated presence of senior people here. And I'm certainly really delighted the president and deputy president and other ministers have been here, because we need to work together as government to be able to make this a sector that can grow and help us to create economic growth and jobs.
Farmers believe a strong food secure country is essential to feed the population and the neighboring countries.
For us locally, I think food security is important. As you know, in the world, there are more and more and more and more people, and we need to produce food for those people. So food security is extremely important. We as producers are trying to produce equipment that are able to save farmers time and money and allow them to be more effective, to produce more with the same amount of time and land available to them, so that they can be more effective in what they're doing, and by doing that, ensuring that, well, for the whole of South Africa and the world, we can produce enough food, and especially on the protein side.
I think it's very, very important to protect the food security of our country, because the moment if there's land grabs, for instance, we are putting at risk the food security of our country, and we must be able to provide for the 60 to 70 million people of our country. So it's for me for utmost importance that we must protect the farmers. It doesn't matter what farmers, if it's vegetables or chicken or beef or sheep farmers, we must protect them. And what about the export markets, I think it's outside capital that comes into our country. So it's very important that we don't lose that markets. I mean, there's a big possibility that, like this foot and mouth disease at this stage, it's a big problem in our country. And if we are not able to provide the sheep or the meat or whatever you call it to the outside world, they are just going to the next country to do the imports there, and then we lose a lot of capital.
The business sector also wants to improve trade amongst the emerging businesses on the African continent.
But what we are promoting is we have, we obviously represented in 20 countries across the continent. We've got our teams from Africa and from across the continent, as well as clients here today. And it's around networking, creating engagements between clients in South Africa, farmers with across the continent, and to see how they can engage, get to know each other, and begin the process of trading with each other. So we're trying to open that piece up. We also have local people on the ground in all of those countries who understand the environment, understand the players within the market, and we can obviously facilitate introductions between various agricultural clients.
The banking sector says despite all the efforts to help, climate change sometimes poses a major challenge to the agricultural sector and a threat to food security.
Right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item is that the unemployment rate, 6 provinces, including Limpopo, has surged as reported in the latest quarterly labor force survey of Stats South Africa. Now, the percentage of unemployment individuals in the provinces increased by 0.6% from the fourth quarter of 2024 and now sits at 33.3%. We might take a listen to this, whereas the job were lost in the construction and mining sector in the first part of this year.
The percentage of job seekers as well as discouraged unemployed people in Limpopo has risen. A total of 55,000 jobs were lost in several industries between the fourth quarter of 2024 and the first quarter of 2025. This now puts the overall unemployment figure of Limpopo at 33.3%. Manufacturing, mining and construction are some of the key sectors that had shed jobs.
We must question why manufacturing, contracting and mining are depleting by the numbers that they have. And again, it all boils down to infrastructure. You know, we look at a place like Western Cape that created 140,000 jobs, but we lost 55,000. Why? Why and what is the difference? Well, the difference is infrastructure.
In terms of the expanded definition of unemployment, the province's rate now sits at 48.6%, the third highest in the country. Some young people are discouraged.
Most youth nowadays are graduates, but there are no jobs. And then you're expected to apply via CVs and all that, and those are expenses which you are unemployed. You don't have money for to go printing, to climb a taxi, to go submit. I think they should come up with more initiatives that would be, I think, in a sense, more digital.
At least if they can do something in terms of budget, finances, so we can grow our businesses, get more people working. For me, I'll speak on my side. I would like to see my business grow. I'd like to also enter into logistics as well. So if we get more trucks, transport, people getting on the road, transportation stuff, that would be really good. So yeah, also empowering young people.
A recent international investment roundtable discussion in Limpopo focused on the need to attract both foreign and domestic investors to the province. The goal is to foster economic growth that can eventually translate into a reduction of unemployment in the near future.
During that period, a number of construction projects, money was lost. Those who were working through government projects, infrastructure projects, the new financial year start, and then you forfeit the grant to National Treasury. So that could have play a major role. And when you look at agriculture, they are saying, the report is saying, we might have increased around 7,000 employment.
The province anticipates that the projected investment will significantly address backlogs in infrastructure, leading to provincial economic growth and job creation.
All right. Now, to move on to another item is that Togo women using digital technology to drive transformation.
To showcase Togolese craftsmanship, Afiwazi Azenlenko started Eagle Consulting, an innovative company that promotes made-in-Togo products online. This did not, however, come easy.
My main challenges were digital and communication-related. Promoting my products on social media, expanding my company and customer base, That was a big challenge for me. I can assure you that today I post my products on social media and I sell thanks to digital tools.
Okay. Akakpo, a beneficiary of the Nanotech program, a multifaceted initiative by the government aimed at empowering women entrepreneurs in the digital space, learned how to use social media strategically, create attractive visual content, and manage an online shop. Akakpo is not an isolated case. Many women like her are reshaping their future through digital empowerment. Marlene Chogli founded Sunclay, a startup that specializes in clay-based beauty products. For her, Nanotech was a real turning point.
Thanks to Nanotech, I've learned to manage projects. I've learned to develop a much more refined marketing strategy.
Nanotech is an initiative of the Togolese government aimed at empowering women entrepreneurs and those with digital skills to grow the digital economy. The program, named after the wealthy Togolese businesswomen of the 1960s, is paying off.
We are proud to have trained around 3,000 women across Togo. And today, when we run other activities, we meet entrepreneurs who share how much digital tools have helped their businesses.
With Nanotech, Togolese women are becoming a powerful lever of economic empowerment and claim.
All right, there you have it. The time is 19 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and it is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the police have raised concerns of the added administrative strain that could accompany the implementation of the Older Persons Amendment Bill. Now, the bill is aimed at the enhancing the well-being and protection of elderly people. Now, it also focuses on improving service standards, addressing abuse, and providing temporarily safe care. Now, appearing before Parliament's Social Development Portfolio Committee last week, police raised issues about the removal of older persons to temporarily safe care and the responsibility of police officers in such instances. We might take a listen.
In the protection mechanisms for some of the most vulnerable in society. Among others, it will allow for the removal of older persons to temporary care without a court order in very specific circumstances. In this event, police may remove the older person with his or her consent or the consent of an authorized person if the older person is incapable of consenting. But police are concerned that the bill does not specify who the authorized person would be, like in a case where the older person lives with an abusive family member or if the elderly person is found on the streets. Another worry is where police must accommodate the older person once they are removed.
It will require that there is additional budget, there is additional a specification that we need to conform or change the how the police stations look to accommodate that. Even with sexual offences, we don't have a place where we keep the victims. It's a 24-hour accommodation while we are looking at other alternative placement.
That I'm not sitting here nervous and panicking, especially because these issues have been now raised and both the Department of Social Development and the Department of Police have raised their issues and they have been deliberated. And I really am trusting the process here.
Social Development says concerns raised by SAPS can be addressed in the regulations of the bill. Zaline Merrington, SABC.
Let me turn to the story now.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item is that President Cyril Ramaphosa is en route to Washington, D.C. for the higher stakes meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump. Now, the leaders are expected to discuss bilateral relations and recent tensions. We might take a listen.
Take you back to one of our...
And there's no South African ambassador in the United States. And if we did have normal diplomatic relations between the countries and everything was cordial, then a visit by the heads of state, I think, would be appropriate. But I really think that the visit is premature, and that also does have an impact on the kind of message that perhaps would be taken now, but it could be a problem.
The minister in the presidency, who also happens to be the cabinet spokesperson, telling the media last week that this meeting is actually at the invitation of the United States, and therefore they are, I suppose, merely honoring that. Do you believe that South Africa, and indeed Ramaphosa, should have perhaps taken a step backwards?
Well, I hear what the Honourable Minister is saying, but it's not necessarily actually factually correct. I think there was some interaction between our President and the President of the United States, and coming from that discussion, there was an invitation sent at that stage. I understand that the interaction was there and that was necessary. But as I've said, I think the visit is premature. If you look at the differences between South Africa and the United States at this stage, the relationship is at a very bad state at this stage, and I think we are running a risk of a diplomatic embarrassment and a catastrophe. For the simple reason, one must understand that the President of the United States has made his position quite clear in public. As far as I understand, there are some non-negotiables from the Trump administration. And some of these things I know from the perspective from the South African president side, and let me see, I say from the ANC side, are also not really accommodative in that instance. One must also understand, if you talk to me about the government of national unity, I think that is one of the flaws in the current composition of the government of national unity, that it was agreed by, I don't know whom, at the beginning of this process, that international relations would be the sole domain of the former ruling party, and I think that creates a problem. So it's not that simple or that clear to say this should be the message. And I think if you look at what the press basically says now and what is being speculated, I think that the message is going to be that Mr. Trump, relax, things are all fine and secure at home. And I don't think that is the kind of message that is going to be a successful message at all.
You make the point repeatedly that South Africa's relations with the U.S. are at an all-time low right now, and perhaps this is not an opportune moment for Ramaphosa to engage Trump. Let me perhaps hasten and say that the Afrikaner resettlement program, is that part of your major concern that characterizes these relations? This particular visit to the U.S. happens on the back of the 49 Afrikaners leaving for the United States. Let's get your party's understanding and thoughts around that departure first. What do you make of the resettlement program by Donald Trump?
Well, I think that is one of the issues that it clearly stipulates the strained relations between South Africa, because you must understand, and we all know, that the 49 South Africans who received refugee status and moved to the United States, that is a direct result of the executive order earlier given by President Trump. So he feels quite strongly about that. With regard to these 49 South Afrikaners who basically left, it's sad. It's really sad, and I feel very sad about that in the sense I don't want to see a single Afrikaner leave the country of their birth. It shouldn't be like that. We should rather ask the question, what then is the problem? Why did they feel it necessary to leave South Africa and to feel that they've got a better life or a better opportunity to go forward in life in the United States? And I believe we should do everything possible to address those kind of concerns that brought people to the position where they left.
We'll talk about the underlying causes in a moment, but was President Trump correct, or was he absolutely wrong to do that, to take this particular step? Because he is communicating a very negative message about our country.
I don't think he was wrong. I think he acted within his authority, obviously, and in terms of his perception of what's going on in South Africa. And I don't think it's wrong. One can argue about the definition about refugees, etc., those kind of things. He thought it was a necessary thing to make that possible, to reach out to a specific community, and he has also now extended that. If you look at the communications on the American Foreign Department of International Relations in the United States, they have extended that to refer to minorities in South Africa, and that brings us to the whole question, does minorities feel that they are accommodated in South Africa or not? And that is a different question, a different discussion, I guess.
All right, there you have it. Lastly, on the international segment, it's at the two key roads in Rusaka Central Business District have been renamed in honor of Namibian's founding ladies. Now, Sanjua Road is now officially Hagging Kop Road, named after the late president of Namibia. And meanwhile, Kasama Road has been renamed Dr. Sam Nyoma Road in recognition of the first Namibian first president. Now, speaking during the unveiling ceremony, visiting Namibian's president, Netumbo Ndaitwa, thanked President Hakainde Hichilema that the Namibian government for honoring the two leaders. Now, President Hakainde Hichilema said the gesture reflects the deepening diplomatic ties between Zambia and Namibia. We might take a listen to this particular update.
It is a road that holds significance as it leads to what was known as the UN Institute for Namibia, now housing the Ministry of Community Development. This road was often used by late President of Namibia, Hage Geingob, when he served as director at the UN Institute for Namibia. And now, the road has been renamed after President Geingob. President of Namibia, Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa, says the renaming of the road adds strength to the bilateral ties between Zambia and Namibia.
Therefore, the renaming of this road to Dr. Hage Godfrey Geingob is a kind of affection that further ignites the affinity that exists between our two nations. The renaming of this road after President Geingob gives new stature to our long-standing friendship with Zambia, a friendship that was forged during our long and bitter struggle for freedom. I express our deepest appreciation to President Hichilema, the city of Lusaka, and the people of Zambia for unanimously renaming.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low, because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwig.
This road after our leader, Dr. Hage Godfrey Geingob.
And former First Lady of Namibia, Monica Geingob, thank President Hakainde Hichilema for fulfilling his promise made during President Geingob's funeral.
President Hichilema announced at Hage's memorial service that a road would be named after him in Lusaka. And here we are today to witness a promise kept. This road honors Hage and is a testament to President Hichilema's integrity as a man of his word, his pan-Africanism, and his commitment to the enduring bonds between Zambia and Namibia. Your Worship, thank you for your leadership in ensuring that this street naming has happened today and making this event possible, and please extend our gratitude to the rest of your city council.
Lusaka Mayor Chilando Chitangala highlighted the significance of such gestures.
This event is a testament to a deep and enduring friendship between our two nations. It is also a recognition of the profound impact this leader has had, not just in Namibia, but across the African continent.
Meanwhile, Kasama Road in Lusaka has been renamed Sam Nyoma after founding president of Namibia.
We really cherish this, and there is no doubt this will again contribute to the strengthening of cooperation between our two countries, our two governments, and our two people.
And late First President Sam Nyoma's grandson, Prince, praised the Zambian government for honoring his grandfather's legacy.
We are especially grateful to President Hichilema for making this announcement during the state funeral of President Geingob, and for hosting us so warmly here in Lusaka, a city that was, for many of our freedom fighters, a second home during the liberation era.
Zambia played a significant role in Namibia's attainment of independence in 1990.
All right, there you have it. The time is 33 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. We might take a listen to a very short commercial break, and once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Do not go away.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. The time is 34 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning school. Thank you so much for turning back. And again, thank you for joining us. If you're just joining us right now, thank you so much and a very good morning to you once more. Now, to start off, we want to start with one of the story in our today's newspaper. Please don't forget to rather ask or request or subscribe to get a newspaper. That what you have to do is just to send through your details to 081-241-44. That's a number that you can always ask for the newspaper as by sending through your detail, and you need to save that number so you get the newspaper every day it's released. Or rather, you can subscribe to the WhatsApp channel that is Eagle FM Media House channel. Then, of course, you can able to be getting the newspaper every day it's released. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Now, to start is here the Deputy Minister of Education, Innovation, and Youth Sport and Art Culture, Dino Baroti, has urged school principal across the country to make school halls available for all indoor sports, particularly in the Kavango East region. Now, he made this call on Saturday, during an engagement with regional sport officers and coaches in Rundu. Now, Baroti emphasized the urgent need to create safe and accessible spaces for young people to participate in sports, especially in urban areas where recreation facilities are limited. Now, school halls, which often remain unused after school hours, can be transformed into venues for indoor sports such as volleyball, basketball, boxing, and others. Now, that's what Baloti said. Now, we need to think creatively about how to utilize existing infrastructure to promote youth development and health lifestyle. that what he said. Now he also called on all education stakeholders and school management committee to work closely with local sports clubs and community organizations to implement structured sports program. Nabarito also highlighted the broader benefit of youth sport, including better academic performances and discipline, teamwork, and improved mental health. Now, he further revealed that plans are underway to engage all stakeholders with existing infrastructure to formalize partnerships. Partnerships aim to ensure that schools' facilities serve both educational and community needs. Now, Baluti noted that the region with the second large population in Namibia has already produced international athletes. Now he mentioned that two athletes from the region recently completed at the World Athletes Championship. With this region has the potential to do even better, not only in athletics, but also in football and other sports disciplines. That's what he said. Now, local sport coach Freddie Morondo welcomed Baroti's remark, describing them as a long-awaited relief. Now, we have been struggling for years. Schools' halls are not free for any sport activities. We always have to pay to use them. And it's very expensive. That's what Morondo has said. Now, this makes it hard for community teams and young boxers to train and compete regularly. That's what he said. Now, Morondo added that reduce or removing usage fees would open the doors for more youth, especially those from disadvantaged backgrounds, to participate in sports. Now, Kavango East currently has 192 schools and holds 18 active sporting courts, including rugby. Now, approximately 60 coaches attended the engagement session. Meanwhile, in the Kavango West region on Friday, regional director Pointstinus Musore pointed out critical challenges facing schools, including poor infrastructure and lack of basic sanitation facilities such as toilets. Now, Musore also mentioned the planned construction of the Nkurunkuru Youth and Sports Complex at a step toward addressing those issues. Now, and there's also Baluti also visited Ohangwena region to meet some coaches again at that side. We might take a listen to one of the coach, that is Moses Teofilos. A Deputy Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, Dino Baruti, visited Haimbili Haifiku Secondary School in the Enana on Thursday. Now, during his visit, he met with coaches, regional sport officers and other stakeholders. The purpose of the visit was this: to strengthen collaboration between the ministry and grassroots sports leaders by identifying challenges, providing recommendations and, of course, sprawling opportunities for the regional sports development. Now, Eagle FM also will now be reaching out to the coaches, just also rather to gather their recommendation on how best they can also improve the sports sector in their region. And right now, we're joined by Mr. Moses Teofilos, who is one of the coaches within the region. A very good morning to you, Mr. Teofilos, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning, ma'am. Good morning to listeners.
We are doing great.
Thank you.
Yes, as a coach with a years of experiences, what challenges maybe have you faced and how would you like those challenges to be addressed?
In this big region of Angwena, most of the challenges that we met, and that is the challenges that we have also channeled through the Deputy Minister's office on his visit, is a lack of facilities.
Okay.
Really, really, really lack of facilities hampers sports progress in the Angwena region. Mm. As we are speaking, we don't have any, even we can say substandard sport facilities in the whole region. Mm-hmm. All the sport fields that we have are sense you can't even start crying because looking at what we want to achieve and the facilities that we have, honestly speaking, it just doesn't go hand by hand. But then transport facilities, that is a big challenge, but also the transport also members. Imagine you, a kid have to travel from Okongo to go and play. If, let me say, we are playing a regional competition.
Mm-hmm.
Our regional competition takes place in Oshakati, the Oshakati Independent Stadium, mm-hmm. which is old now. And imagine a kid traveling 200 or 300 kilometers just to go to Oshakati for the regional tournament. That we could have a lot of stadium in the region. We could have then the one in Enana, which is not done yet. And if you can imagine, 17 years now, the stadium is just under construction. Okay. It's something that really demoralizes us sometimes.
Mm.
Yeah, but we are overwhelmed that when we met the deputy minister, we are seeing progress. I know they are only 2 months in the office now,
mm-hmm.
but then honestly speaking, we are seeing progress because what they have done is the budget was set already, as he have informed us. The budget was set already, and in each constituencies,
mm-hmm.
countrywide, there are already centers that are being spotted out where the basic facilities, sports facilities, will be constructed, and that is the good move. Honestly,
okay.
that's really the good move.
Mm, all right. Now, Mr. Theophilos, if your recommendations are met as sport coaches within the region, do you believe maybe the sport industry could positively contribute to the country's economy? And if so, maybe how?
The reason I've been in South Africa for some time,
okay.
and I could see how sport personnel are making living out of sport. Honestly speaking, if we could have sport facilities everywhere, you will find that there are a lot of things that will be met. People will make living. They will not only make living because they are either athletes or they are either coaches or they are either whatever. But we can also have business. If you go to various sport fields across the world or across some African countries, you can find out that even those community members benefit a lot, because when there are a lot of teams that are playing at those stadiums, there will also be a lot of people that are selling. And that is what we need. And even sometimes these athletes themselves, they could even get some few monies and employ some of their peers or their sisters or their brothers to go and sell. That is obviously, if all the constituents get sport facilities, then we are saying Namibia is now heading at the right direction.
Yeah. Now, finally, could you share your thoughts on the current state of sport facilities in the Ohangwen region?
Honestly speaking, we are saying zero. We are saying we have got zero because even the Enana sport complex, which we are saying yes, that is something that we are looking forward to. It will still take even a year to be completed. So that's why we are saying the state of it's completely zero, and we cannot even say in Angwena region, but we are saying countrywide as we are speaking now. Even athletic itself, we don't have a recognized stadium in Namibia, which is recognized by World Athletic. There's nothing. Look at if you want to have an athlete qualified to go even to Olympic or to go wherever, you have to take this athlete to run competition in South Africa or in Botswana, where they have got approved and certified the track and field. So in Namibia, we have got zero. That's why even our national team is not playing in our country.
Mm.
And we are saying we have got zero. If we are not even saying in Angwena region, but we are saying in Namibia. I just want to say let's give the current the current government time. I know our expectations are higher, but let's give them time. They are still young. Let's give them time. Let's give the ministers, deputy ministers, and whoever is involved. Let's give them time, and we see. Probably let's give them a year or 2 years. Then we are saying yes, we are heading on the right direction, or no, we are not heading on the right direction. But what I'm promising is what we are seeing. Just as honourable president have said, it's not business as usual. We are seeing that ministers are now trying to achieve what the excellency wants at least to be achieved. That's why she said it's not business as usual. And if she said if the ministers are not working, she cannot honestly speaking wait for somebody who is not doing his job or his or her job. If you are not doing the job, if you are not she said, before I'm moved, I should move you first. But that will all be achieved if all the Namibians put hands together. And let's not only wait for probably ministers, deputy minister, whoever, but all Namibians, let's put hands together. At least let's put hands together so that we help each other. Just to grow to grow the country. It's the country belongs to everybody, but not to politicians or to whoever.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Moses, for having you.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
All right. There you had it. Another coach, Simon Akasheta, shared some challenges they face and how they would also like those challenges to be addressed. We might take a listen.
Yes, good to morning, Grace, and good morning to the listeners of Eagle FM. We are unpacking the challenges that we are experiencing as coaches and any other things. As a coach, club chairman, and a regional chairman of NSSU at the same time, the challenges are quite almost the same when it comes to a sport, particular in Angwena region. The coaches have a challenges of not having adequate experience or adequate knowledge. There's a lack of training facilities or training opportunities for coaches. There is also a challenges when it comes to starting up capitals. And the coaches are sometimes using their own capitals to, in order for them to be able to carry out their duties. There's also a challenge of a lack of developmental clubs or academies where athletes can then, their skills can be fine-tuned. The skills of athletes in Angwena region surely depends on the natural skills that they are given by God. Due to lack of academies, then the coaches also have to do a lot of deeper work. These challenges can be addressed in a very holistic and honest way, such as creating platform for coaches to get certified, building or renovating and upgrading of sport facilities, higher level sport facilities, providing starting capitals to all our academies and all teams that are playing in the second division, first division, third division, so that the coaches are not able to use their funds as it is draining them for now. So those are many of the challenges. The challenges are many, but I will mention a very few of them. As I have said, and the recommendation or the advice of the ministry is to come up with sport facilities. Let's create sport facilities for our learners or for our athletes so that they be able to stay out of danger.
All right. He also discussed how possibly sport can contribute to the country's economy if their recommendations are met.
Yes, sport is a big market. It's unfortunate that especially when it comes to political leadership in the Angwena region, to be in particular, they do not understand that sport has the ability and all the ingredients to bring the much needed employment in this region. When they look at sport, they only believe that it's kicking of the ball. That's the sport interestingly. But they do not understand that when there's a game or there's a tournament or there's a league game in a village or in a town, a lot of activities, a lot of economical activities do take place. Let me give you an example. If there is a Namibian Cup in Angwena region, that means all the guest house, the accommodations in Enana will be fully occupied. That means there will be extra customers to buy products from all markets in Enana. That means that the economy of Enana town will elaborate on those days. So sport is the ability to contribute positively to the country's economy. And this is by creating the government must pump more money into the sport industry. Let's professionalize the sport economy. I mean the sport industry. Let's make sure that the players or the athletes that are taking part are recognized. And then when we pump money into the sport industry, this is going to be positively contribute a lot to the country's economy. The level of unemployment will decrease. The employment rate and the business opportunity in the region and in the country in general will be boosted. So my recommendation, the recommendation that we give to the minister, to the deputy minister when he was in Enana, if they are placed into place, if they are taken into consideration and they are dealt to, believe me, this country will go far in terms of creating employment opportunities through sport industry, boosting the country's economy through the sport industry. So, but we also wish that those who are involved in the sport industry also take up opportunities. Prepare yourself for the greater opportunities that are coming forth so that you are able to capitalize in all opportunities that will come with the vibe that the Ministry of Sport and has placed before us.
Lastly, he shared the current state of sports facilities in the Angwena region.
Finally, when we come to the state of sport facilities in Angwena region, this is one of the things that is withholding us from unpacking the full capacity of sport industry in Angwena region, for example. If you look at how many years Enana sports complex has been under construction, but we have been told until today that no, we are doing better, we are doing great, we are working hard. They were once in the newspaper saying, no, the sports facility is complete. But I'm telling you, we are still faced with that dilemma of a sports facility that is standing for 15 years now, and counting, or 17, if I'm not mistaken, that has not yet been used for the Indian purpose. apart from being used for political analysis, of which I know that was not the aim of it. But when the minister was here, we put it straight to him that we are not going to stand here and watch another 15 years coming of the facility not being finalized. But luckily, the minister have given us an outcome that the field will soon be finalized and funds have been availed for its quick upgrades. But in general, Angwena region is suffering from lack of sport facilities, either at our schools or in the region itself. You can see that we only have one field of grass, that's the field at Chelaona Fidi. And in the whole region of more than 200,000 athletes that are playing on a daily basis, they are using fields that are very not in a good state. So if we look at, for example, at sport courts like netball, basketball, volleyball, tennis, cricket, these sport facilities, these sport courts do not have sport facilities in Angwena region, making it very difficult for our athletes to be able to take part in this sport facilities. At least soccer is better because you use whatever ground that is available. As long as it doesn't have obstacles, then you play. But in netball, basketball, you need a specialized sport field. Unfortunately, currently in the Angwena region, we do not have. As a regional chairperson of NSSU, we are currently running a fundraising campaign to find funds so that we can construct one netball court in Oshela, to be particular in Oshela Senior Secondary School, so that all those learners from the 5 circuits in the eastern side of the region are able to use that field, because that will be the first field that they will have. And we are calling upon the private sectors, the public sector, the colleagues in the Ministry of Education, Art and Culture, everybody in the country to come forth and offer their support so that we are able to construct that field and our athletes are able to use standardized sport facilities in Angwena region. We expect to have enough funds so that we are able to construct this field for our athletes. The field cost is looking around 350,000.
Hello, Namibia. NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag Your Data Matters.
Standardized
sport facilities in Angwena region. We expect to have enough funds so that we are able to construct this field for our athletes. The field cost is looking around 350,000 Namibian dollars. So we invite all the public, we invite everybody to join the minister of the deputy minister of sport in his call so that we take our sport into another state. Sport is not just a career of fun. Sport is a career in which employment is available and it has the ability to boost the country's economy. We can give you an example of those that do not used to go to the field, I can give them an example. When you go to Shakati Independence Stadium and Chula Chula is playing against any team, I'm telling you the type of economy that happens around that field and inside the field, you will wish every day is a sport day so that people are able to make a small living for their own survival. And we congratulate all teams, including Chula Chula, that has brought fame and imaginative vibe to the Namibian sport. Thank you very much.
All right, there you have it. The time is 2 minutes in the after 7 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that my colleague Sharon Seaman spoke to energy engineer Festus Nunyango following the recent announcement of electricity tariff and the target of 70% electrification in the country.
So, the uncertainty in the electricity prices and electrification plan in Namibia on Tuesday, the Ministry of Industrialization, Mines and Energy hosted a meeting on ambitions to reach a capacity of 70% household electrification in Namibia. So the parallel to that, the Electricity Control Board announced a consensus of continuing to increase the electricity price nationally as they announced 3.8% back tariffs increases. So today we are going to engage with one of the electrical engineering, Festus Nunyango, and he's also one of the members of Meta Fabrications in Namibia. So good morning, Festus Nunyango, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Festus Nunyango, can you tell us more? Can you tell us more details about these, the increase of electricity? Like, what does it really, or does it really make sense for the economy to expand electricity distribution when it's not affordable?
Yes. First of all, electricity is very, very important to any individual for a development to take place. There must be electricity. The power is very needed. So, it does not really necessarily mean that people cannot afford if they cannot afford, they should not be deprived of not having electricity. We can give the electricity. Those who are able to pay for that amount, they can pay. But the increase which ACB for 3.8, which they have approved, is quite reasonable. It's quite okay. Because the cost of generating electricity is increasing rapidly each and every year. So it together with inflation and all stuff. So NamPower and other company which are producing the electricity, or they also need to recover, or they need also, the government also need to carry on with their other developmental agendas in their and maintenance for their electricity infrastructure existing.
So, okay. So can the ministry perhaps dedicate more resources to boost the domestic electricity production process first, or does it have a plan in mind? Or what do you think about this?
Yes, the electricity can be expanded, but basically the cost of electricity start with generations. Mm-hmm. How you generate the electricity. Where do you get the electricity from? It's well known in Namibia that electricity which we are importing is quite expensive than electricity which we are producing locally. What are the means of producing locally in Namibia at the moment? We have diesel, maybe there's some at Swakop, at Vavis Bay, NamPower does that. We have solar, we have wind, we have hydro. And we have also coal. Some of those traditional way of producing electricity, they are also okay, but they are regarded as not much. Some of them are regarded not environmental friendly, like burning the coal and burning the diesel is not environmental friendly. But there is some other which we are also neglecting. I don't know why we are neglecting them. The initiative from the Ministry of Mines and Energy, they are the one actually supposed to spearhead that is together with the government developmental agenda. That is especially when it comes to nuclear power. We are the one largest, second maybe largest in Africa for mining, to export our uranium. The uranium, the company which mining the uranium here, it got a subsidy in China, and that company is producing almost 80% or 60% of electricity in China.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of talking or having a discussion with this company, I have said that our president has, two or three weeks ago, has approached this company also for increasing the growth at home or something, increasing the productivity at home or to support the local. But also, I was expecting to hear that he requests this company to set up a nuclear power in Namibia. If we set up a nuclear power in Namibia, it will be able to supply the demand, the whole demand, which is almost 630 at the moment. And we can also sell this surplus to other SADC countries through the Southern power pools. We have, it's good that our grid is interconnected. If you can supply the electricity from Namibia, South Africa, Botswana, then Zimbabwe, then Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can go from Namibia to Zambia. Mm-hmm. So our electricity is quite interconnected. You can sell electricity if you produce surplus. So by also using the uranium, nuclear, it has advanced very well to a fifth generation. That fifth generation, it allows you to produce, you are producing electricity, and at the same time you are also doing water desalination. Water desalination, meaning that you are killing two birds with one stone. And the water and the electricity are very critical at the center of development for Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things which you have to target. And we must be self-reliant. We must not rely on importing these things from South Africa, from other countries. Yes, we need our neighbor from other countries, but we should support them. We have nuclear here. Why can't we do that? I mean, we have uranium. Why can't you do that? Okay. Secondly, we have also this wind abundance in Swag, in the Vave, in Ruderitz, and we have also solar. Namibia, actually, what the statistics says that 98% of the time in Namibia is cloudy, it's sunny. We have abundant sun.
Mm-hmm.
So you need sun to produce electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Only at night where you don't have electricity. But we can do that. We can produce electricity with the solar, and then we can bank it in the battery or battery system, can cover up with a battery system. Batteries, they are becoming cheaper nowadays because of technology, improve on the technology. So we can also embark on this one. Let's be reliant, self-reliant. There is no development in any country can take place without electricity. And the electricity has to be affordable to each and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, first, if we may to speak like about SWAPO. Did the SWAPO manifesto, which is currently dictating economic direction, miscalculate the national financial capacity? Or what can you comment on this?
No, I'm quite happy with the SWAPO manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
With SWAPO manifesto and also Vision 2030, and which will be there, we should just implement it. What SWAPO manifesto is doing is all those things which are written there are actually also in NDP 1, NDP 2 of the development. We should just tackle the prioritize. We should just prioritize what we need most at the first.
Mm-hmm.
And that first is energy, water, and other developmental, other agendas which they are mentioning. But actually, today, I want to focus on electricity. Electricity is one of the important things because you need electricity in order to pump water. You need electricity in order to drive other agendas of the economy, to stimulate other agendas. If you want to do manufacturing, you want to manufacture the metals, you want to do the, especially to us in our country, we have zinc, which is being mined there nearby that side of Rosh Pinas and all stuff, there is a zinc mine there, and that zinc is being exported. Why? Because if we could have enough electricity, maybe those companies like Anglo Ashanti and Anglo American, they can come in, or Rio Tinto, they can come in the country and say, look, we are going to add value because to this product, and we can able to make sheets, and we can able to make metals and all stuff locally. But without electricity, you cannot have that, company, multi-international company, to come and set up company of that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So electricity is the key. To me, electricity is the key to the development.
Okay. So my last question is, what is the best way to produce long-term sustainable energy for domestic and external consumptions, especially, let me say, to our country, to Namibia?
To have long-term sustainable I'm just encouraging that let's have the self-reliance. Let's focus on generating our own electricity locally and sell the surplus outside the country. If we don't have maybe resources or money or something, let's get in the form of grant or in the form of loan and fund this tangible, this tangible project, our generations, maybe 10 years after the 10 years, we can reach the break-even point, and we are going to be thankful for such project. Let's say this. When Rakana was built, it was producing a lot of electricity, which Namibia could not even use, didn't need it that time. But at the moment, Nampawa and other government or Nampawa smile to the bank during the rain season or during when the water is flowing, because they are producing electricity free of charge, and they are not even paying imports for electricity from certain power pools. They use it. It's a cash cow for them. It's a cash cow for the country. It's a cash cow for you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can have also nuclear is a source of power in other country. I don't know this topic. People used to avoid it. Ministry, they do avoid it many times, and it pops up in many meetings, but the officials, maybe, I don't know, I cannot say somebody is blocking it, but these things must be taken out from the under the carpet. We need nuclear. If our founding father also in the past, he said, no, we have abandoned nuclear, we should come up with a nuclear power station. This is one of our vision, which our founding father had also before.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Festus Nyango, for being with us on the Early Morning Scoop. I would like to say, have a blessed day ahead.
Thank you very much. Have a blessing ahead too.
Okay.
There you had it. The time is 15 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the Southern African Customs Union, SACU, has resolved to maintain its common external tariff, despite the United States imposing reciprocal tariffs on SACU member states last month. Now, Lesotho and South Africa have been the most affected by those measures. Now, the decision was announced in a statement issued on Wednesday by the SACU Council of Ministers, currently chaired by Finance Minister Elika Shafuda. Now, Shafuda explained that the council unanimously agreed to retain the 42% external tariff to protect the integrity of the regional market. Now, in order to preserve the internal market, SACU members will ensure that in any effort to conclude a partnership with the USA, the common external tariff is preserved, and due regard is taken not to undermine regional industrial capabilities, she said.
Now, the council also emphasized its commitment to advancing regional integration by accelerating the implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Area. Now, efforts will focus on resolving outstanding issues such as the role of origin for the clothing, textile and automotive sectors, as well as the development of regional value chains. Now, according to the council, fostering regional value chains will set SACCO on a sustainable development path and help align export strategies to capitalize on existing trade agreements. Additionally, the SACCO bloc expressed its willingness to engage in a constructive dialogue with the United States. Now, the SACCO region is ready to engage with the U.S. to find an amicable solution to its trade concerns and to seek cooperative solutions that promote mutually beneficial trade and investment relations, as well as the preserving existing supply chains, that was Shafuta said. Now, although the U.S. reciprocal tariffs have been suspended for 90 days until 9 July 2025, Shafuta stressed the importance of addressing the issue with urgency. Now, the council also acknowledged the positive impact of unilateral trade agreement, such as the African Growth and Opportunity Act, that is AGOA, which have played a significant role in fostering trade between SACCO and the United States. Historically, a trade between the USA and SACCO has been governed primarily by the most favorable nation and principle and AGOA preferences. However, the recent imposes of reciprocal tariffs has strained his relationship. Namibia, despite its AGOA allegedly, was hit with a 21% tariff on all its exports to the U.S. Following the recent tariff changes. Now, on the next item, the Namibian Police Force, NAMPOL, in collaboration with the Wivers Bike Corridor Group, has had an engagement with transport stakeholders and logistics industry. Now, the session aimed at fostering collaboration for enhancing road safety and compliance. Now, speaking at the session is Commissioner Petrus Swartz, Head of Traffic Law Enforcement. We might take a listen to what he has to say.
What I want to focus on today is the importance of fostering collaboration to enhance road safety and compliance. The aspect of collaboration, working together, joining hands. If somebody experiencing something, don't keep it to yourself and be frustrated. Share it with the next, and then everybody look at it, and then we get a solution to the problem. That is what I'm looking at. The role of the transporters is very critical in Namibia. Transporters are definitely the backbone of the logistics industry. They are responsible of moving goods from the one location to the other, ensuring that the supply chains remain unbroken. To mitigate contributes to safer road environments for all road users. Then I want to focus on the role of the Namibian Police Force. I want to be very sure, because I want to hear what the truckers brought here today. This notes the talking points I can say to the Valvespy group or to the media. The role of the Namibian Police is we are responsible for enforcing laws that are there in Namibia. We are law enforcement agency. So that is what we are doing. And specifically the traffic law enforcement, we are enforcing traffic laws and ensuring road safety in Namibia. That is our mandate, our most critical thing that we are doing. The role is crucial in maintaining order and preventing crashes. However, policing alone is not enough to achieve sustainable road safety outcomes. Collaboration between NAMPOL and other stakeholders is very, very essential. By working with transporters, logistic companies,
and the Walvis Bay Corridor Group, NAMPOL, can develop a comprehensive approach to road safety. This includes joint operations, information sharing, and community engagement. By building strong partnerships, NAMPOL can enhance its capabilities to achieve better compliance with traffic regulations. Now I want to stick to the benefits of collaboration. Fostering collaboration among transporters, logistic companies, the Walvis Bay Corridor Group and NAMPOL offers numerous benefits. Firstly, it creates a unified approach to road safety, ensuring that all stakeholders are working towards the same goals. By sharing information and best practices, stakeholders can identify and address potential risks more effectively. That's number one. Number two, collaboration enhances compliance with regulations. When all parties understand and adhere to the safety standards, the likelihood of crashes and incidents is significantly reduced. This is not only protects lives, but also minimize disruptions to the supply chain. Thirdly, collaboration fosters innovation and continuous improvement. By working together, stakeholders can develop and implement new technologies and strategies to enhance road safety. This includes the use of advanced data analytics and predictive maintenance tools. In conclusion, the importance of fostering collaboration to enhance road safety and compliance cannot be overstated. By working together, transporters, logistic companies, the Walvis Bay Corridor Group, and the Namibian Police can create a safer and more efficient road transport system. This collaboration not only benefits the stakeholders involved, but also contributes to the overall economic development of the region. It is through these collective efforts that we can ensure a safer and more prosperous future for all of us.
There you have it. The time is 24 minutes in the half 7 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the from the 24,207 cattle slaughtered in Namibia in the first quarter of 2025, the country was able to produce another product beyond beef, which is animal hides, which were exported to four countries. Now, updates from the Livestock and Livestock Products Board of Namibia show that in the first quarter of 2025, the country has processed some of its cattle skin into bovine white, blue, and exported it. Now, this is 208,106 kg in the form of a bonite, a wet blue and processed that was exported to South Africa, Zimbabwe, the UK and China. Now, most of the country's hide go to South Africa, which bought 223,189 kilograms of the Namibian hide in the first quarter. Now, despite this processing, the countries could not meet its internal demand for processing cattle skins for further processing into the finished products. Now, in the first 3 months of the year, Namibians imported 165,976 kilogram of the hides and skins. Namibia has the capacity to fill the gap as the countries export more livestock compared to slaughters. Slaughtering locally not only produce beef but also hide, which is an input for various industries uses. Now, the country has to a certain extent developed its leather industry with various small and medium companies and now are producing leather shoes and bags. However, those products remain quite quite too many due to the prices as they struggle to obtain raw material for their products. Now, the government has invested in various infrastructure, one of them being Ondangwa, which is now exported to the processing plant for cattle skin. However, the factory has been lying with its equipment for a number of years. Now, before the trade and industrialization were dismantled, it reached out to the private sector for investment to renovate the Ondangwa tannery, which had been dominant for 7 years, and bring it into operation. Now, in some financial years, funds were allocated for the renovation, but the work on session, such as the workshop and the mechanical electrical of the facility, was not completed. Now, it has been noted that the tannery is crucial in value addition for the northern farmers who have no access to market for hides and skins beyond the red line. Now, renovating the tannery has been signed out as the much-needed activity. Now, the tannery was to enable local value addition with livestock farmers selling hides from slaughtered livestock to the tannery, which will process the hide into the leather for shoe and sofa manufacturers in the countries or abroad. Now, in 2016, the ministry invested $60 million to upgrade the tannery, replacing and repairing machines to ensure that the tannery meets a set environmental standard before it starts operations. Now, the tannery was set up to assist the local communities in selling hides and allow the business communities to invest in leather projects as part of a developmental strategy for the local economy. Now, and that the tannery has, however, been closed since 2013. Now, if you have more information, all right, and that is it. Now, just lastly, on the last update of the day, the Namibia in the process of introducing policy making and possibly legislation that would see the potential protection of indigenous and languages. Now, the stakeholder engagement that brought together local academics, traditional leaders, and concerned citizens from various groups of Namibia's ethnic or rather cultural landscape. Now, organization organized by the Institutes of Public Policy Research, Namibia Media Trust, and the DW Academy, and funded by the European Union with support from the ZEX agency. The aim is to ensure those languages are preserved for generations to come. Now, that the survival of ethnic and minority languages in the age of globalization is a contagious processing. Now, as with everything else, globalization has had a major impact on language worldwide. So many indigenous languages have become indigenous and others on the brink of existence now without a deliberate and, of course, appropriate policy intervention. So language on the brink will eventually die out. And on that, that marks our last update of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in on today's edition. That is Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much. And I'll be handing over to my colleague, Tete Makosh, to take you through the usual unpacking of the day. Please do not go away from me, Lois Shim. It's a good day. Enjoy the rest of the day. And do not forget to tune into all our programs. Thank you so much.
Your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of The featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsie Nehangano, Dio Sherero o Maimburilo, The Catholics Maneka Karunga, The Africans Sung for Diara, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-2358-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaidi.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. She goes a fatana, na longish fa, yai, she with the Moshiwana. E. Moyao, or Tango got the Samweni. Ana the Shifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangeka. The Ethanina, Omeguro, Niranditoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupira, Mo, Eagle FM Media House. We 20 PM, Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwe po yo mo programa detu moambo dengera selma onora heta tuimwe datundatu heari jamano tano o niyaji Eagle FM the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.